So good morning. This is the 100-pound special focus meeting of Overeaters Anonymous on May 28th. And we're lucky enough today to have a lovely speaker, James. I'm excited because I've never heard you before. But James, he hails from Galway and he lives in Dublin. He came to OA for one meeting in 2013, but he didn't stay. Sounds like there were a lot of us. But for the grace of God, he returned in 2016 and he hasn't left since. So take it away, James. Thank you for your service. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Christina. Thank you, everybody. Hi, my name is James. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. God struck me abstinent on the 9th of August 2016, which is approximately 8 years and 8 months, 9 months, something like that. And God was also gracious enough to take from me approximately 7 or 8 stone in weight, which I think is maybe around 100 pounds, give or take, or 40 something kilos. I actually forget the exacts now, to be perfectly honest with you. I don't even know how much I weigh, to be honest. So which in of itself is a miracle. But before I kind of get into all that good stuff, I'm going to go right back to the very beginning. So my whole life revolved around food. Every waking moment from a very, very, very young age, like I can never remember not being obsessed with food. You know, there are photos of me where I was a healthy body weight as a very, very small child. But even then, I was obsessed with food. I was the child who finished their siblings' dinner, who ate their siblings' sweets when they weren't looking, who snuck into the kitchen to steal a biscuit when no one was around, who pestered my poor mum to get whatever new food I'd seen on the TV the day before. I was just obsessed with food. You know, what I ate, what I didn't eat, what everyone else ate, you know, what I should have eaten or could have eaten. You know, when I look back on all the big moments in my life, in my childhood, I remember the food. You know, I remember the food, and that's it's not normal. You know, it's not normal for a child. You know, if I know I have some nieces in my life, and if I asked them what they had for their dinner yesterday, they probably would look at me, you know, like, no, they wouldn't have a clue, you know. But I could have told you. And you know, as a result of that, you know, I became chubby at a young age, and I got bullied, and you know, I was ashamed of my body from a very young age. I hid my body from a very young age, and I wanted to change my body from a very young age. And I went on my first diet when I was maybe 11 years old, 11 or 12. I don't remember exactly what age I was, but yeah, that was the start. And you know, I remember being that age and doing a couple of different crazy diets. You know, I did. A friend of my mum's was in a well-known weight loss club, and they gave us the little, whatever, the booklet or the pamphlet or whatever came with that, and we tried that for a while. And I did that cabbage soup diet. Do you remember that one? Oh, that was horrific. As a child, like as an 11-year-old child, can you imagine trying to eat that muck? And I did another one. I think it was called the Hay Diet or something like that. I don't really remember now. But obviously, I was not very successful at that age. I don't know if I did any of them for more than a day, to be honest. I remember the cabbage soup one. I came home from school for my lunch, and my dad put this cabbage soup down in front of me, and he just kind of looked at me, and I looked at him, and he threw it down the bin. But yeah, I still hated myself, you know, and I hated my body from that young age. And as I progressed through my teens, you know, my weight crept up, and my dad also thought it would be a good idea to open a sweet shop. So that was like winning the lotto for a 13-year-old compulsive overeater. I got to work on weekends and sometimes after school, and I got to eat all the sweets I wanted, and that's what I did. And slowly, a couple of years after that, he opened a fast food restaurant where I also worked and also ate my way through a significant amount of food. And all the time, the weight creeping up and up and up. And yeah, it wasn't until I was about 17 or 18 when I kind of was able to stick to a diet for a considerable, not even a considerable, but for maybe a longer period of time than maybe a day or half a day. And I remember the summer I finished school, I was going on a holiday to a Spanish kind of island with all my friends, and I wanted to be slim. And I remember I tried starving myself for a few days, and that didn't really work. And I tried to make myself get sick, and that didn't really work. And just all this crazy stuff that I tried. I was just so desperate to be thin. Like, that's all I cared about. That's all I wanted. Didn't work. But I kept trying. And then I went to university, and I had a relatively normal-ish life. I mean, I also realized when I was a teenager that I was gay, so that was another kind of shameful thing that I thought I had, that I didn't necessarily want in my life, and something I kept a secret for quite some time. I also used to think that, oh, as soon as I come out, I won't need the food. I used to think the food was a result of that. And maybe there was some truth in that. I don't know. I'm not smart enough to figure those things out. But I've gone off track there. But yeah, my weight kept going up, and I use food for everything, whether I was happy or sad or stressed or anything, food was my answer, food was my solution. And I ate and I ate and I ate, and somehow got my way through university. And in my final year of university, I just thought to myself, I can't go on like this anymore. I can't keep going. I'm sick of being the fat one. I'm sick of not being able to do all these things, because even though I traveled and I went on all these trips with my friends, I was always the one who didn't go swimming or wasn't able to jump over the wall or wasn't able to climb the tree or, all this sort of stuff. And when I got to my final year of university, I joined a well-known weight loss club, which I had been in a couple of times before, and I had, I had lost little bits of weight, but this time I actually stuck to a diet for 6 months, and I lost a considerable amount of weight. And I was wearing the same clothes all year in college, and then I did my last exam on a Friday, went into town and bought all new clothes and went out with my friends, and I looked, got my hair cut and looked like a totally new person. And I just had this, I have arrived, I have arrived, look at me, look how great I am. And everyone was really shocked because I'd been wearing the same clothes. They didn't really notice that I'd lost as much weight. And of course, that felt amazing. And then I woke up on Saturday and went straight back into the food, as you do, as you do. And I remember, just thinking, like, what the hell is this? Like, what is this? I'm after losing all this weight, and now I'm back eating all this food again. Like, I couldn't get my head around it. And but I remember over the course of the next kind of year or two or three, thinking, like, this isn't a food problem. There's something more to this than just simply me not being able to stop eating. And that kind of started my kind of investigation into different areas. At first I thought I was depressed. So I went to my GP and said, I'm depressed. And he said, why? And I said, 'cause I can't stop eating. And he said, you're not depressed. And I wasn't depressed. But I knew there was something, it was something more than just food, and I needed more than a diet. But I went to a therapist, I went to a counselor. And I remember going into her and saying, I need you to crack me open. I kind of felt like she was just scratching the surface. I said, I need to be cracked open. There's something inside me that I need to get out. I didn't know what that was. And I was trying other self-help things at the time. I was trying yoga, I was trying meditation, I was trying mindfulness, I was reading all these different books, and they're all good, useful kind of things, but none of them helped me put the food down. And I would kind of change between, I'd do something like self-helpy or mindfulnessy or therapy or something like that. And then I get sick of that because it wasn't helping. And I'd go back and try some sort of a diet. And then I'd get sick of being on a diet and I'd go back into the food. And then I'd get sick of being in the food and I'd go back. And it was just this constant cycle, you know, going through all these different things. And I kind of got to my late 20s and I was living in London at the time. And I was staying with a friend of mine. When I first moved there, he gave me a bed to stay in. And first night there, I was like, "Mon, bring me out for a pint. It's my first night in London." And his response was, no, I'm not drinking." And I was like, "What?" And he's like, "Yeah, no, I don't drink anymore." And I was like, "So I just started moving to London. Like, what are you talking about? You don't drink?" And he was like, "No, I don't drink." And of course, me being the inconsiderate person that I am, I just kept pestering and pestering and pestering. And eventually he stops and says, "No, I'm actually an alcoholic." And like, I'm not proud to say this, but I laughed in his face and I was like, "What are you on about? You know, you drink the same way I drink." And I knew I wasn't an alcoholic, you know, because I could take it or leave it. You know, I only drank because everyone else was drinking. And he said, "No, it's true. I'm an alcoholic." And at that time, I thought an alcoholic was, you know, the person on the street with the 2 liter bottle of cider. That was my idea of what an alcoholic was. I didn't understand the concept of being a high functioning alcoholic. So my friend very kindly explained what alcoholism was and how he experienced it, and told me that he was in AA, and we had this wonderful conversation. And I remember coming back from that conversation thinking to myself, you know, the way he spoke about his drinking is the way I think about food. You know, I just really identified with that. And I obviously went on Google and found there was Overeaters Anonymous, and there was a meeting in central London, and I brought myself to that meeting. It was in a basement of a church just off Oxford Street. I want to say it was called Hind Street or something like that, but I can't remember. And I remember being so embarrassed going in and so ashamed going in. And I was convinced I was going to meet someone that I knew and all this sort of stuff. And I was going to pretend like I was just looking for a toilet if anyone asked me what I was doing there. But I went in and I sat down, and it was a meeting actually a bit like this. But two people stood up and they shared, I think, for 10 or 15 minutes each, their stories. And I'm pretty sure both of them cried. And I remember just sitting there going, "Never, ever, 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 ever am I going to go into a room and share that about myself, that sort of." So I come from the west of Ireland, you know, like we're the last frontier, you know. There is no talking about your emotions. It's non-existent. If somebody asks you how you are, there is only one answer, and that is fine. There is no other answer. Like, you know, like the world would end if you gave any answer other than fine. Maybe it's getting a bit better now. Maybe I'm being a bit facetious. But anyways, at that time, that's how I felt. You know, that was just so alien to me. I never ever experienced anybody talking about themselves like that, and apart from maybe on TV. But in my real life, I just couldn't cope with it. So I ran out of that meeting as quickly as I could. I said, "I'm never going near those crazy people ever again." And I spent another 2 or 3 years back dieting, binging, trying therapy. And eventually, a couple of years later, I was back in Dublin and I went back to university and I went back to a well-known weight loss club. And again, I lost a couple of stone at that. And I also had the exact same experience as my final year, first time in university. I finished my exams on a Friday and I finished my diet as well. And I went straight back into the food and my food just ramped. Like it felt like it went from 0 to 100. You know, the progression of the disease was just crazy. I was eating food, amounts of food, quantities of food that I'd never eaten before. I had 6 weeks off before from finishing my course to starting a new job. And I spent that 6 weeks in my home, in my bedroom, you know, with bags of food around me, you know. And I was actually terrified, you know. And at the same time, something kind of snapped in me, and I just felt like I can't diet anymore. Like diets do not work for me. They're never going to work for me. You know, I really did hit my rock bottom, and I thought to myself, I need to find something. There has to be a therapist or someone, because I knew this was more than food, but I didn't know what it was. And I remember just like Googling, like, weight loss therapy or something like that. And the first thing that popped up on Google was Overeaters Anonymous. And the feeling of warmth and safety and security I got when I saw it, it was like a beacon. Even though I'd only been to that one meeting before, I instantly knew that's where I needed to go. I can't explain it. I just had this massive feeling of these people, this thing, whatever it is, can help me. So I looked up my local meeting and I went, a few days later. And again, I was so embarrassed. Like, I was so ashamed. I hid, I creeped in. I thought people were going to, I was going to know everybody there. But I didn't. I'm not sure if I've ever met anyone in a meeting that I know from outside. But I went, and this time, it was a totally different experience than my last time. I heard people sharing my story back to me. I heard people talk about food the way I thought about food. They were doing things that I was doing, all the binging, all the dieting, all the secret eating, all the feelings of shame and guilt and the hatred of my body. And I just felt like there's something here. And I still didn't open my mouth in that meeting, and I tried to run out the door as quickly as I could because I didn't want to talk to anybody. But one person caught me and just said, "Look, don't worry about anything you've heard here tonight. Just come back. Just come back if you can." And I remember driving home that night going, "Okay, whatever happens, I am going to come back." And I mean, I also went to the shop and bought a load of food, but I decided I was going to go back. And I went back the following week, and I had all those thoughts that I'm sure a lot of newcomers have. Is this a cult? Why are they talking about God? How long before I lose the weight? How long do I have to do this for? Do I have to believe in God? Do I have to pray? Or all these kind of thoughts were running through my head. I just sat and listened, to be honest, for the first couple of weeks, and I saw that there were people there who ate like I ate but didn't anymore, and they were healthy body weights, and they looked happy, and they had something about them. They had something in their eyes, and they just felt like they were, serene and healthy. And I remember just asking them, like, "What do I do? What do I do?" And someone said, "Go get a sponsor." So that's what I did. My whole recovery has been copying what other people have done, people who I think are, further down the road than me or have better recovery than me or whatever it is. I've asked them what they do, and I've tried to do it. So I went and I found a sponsor, and he started sponsoring me, and he helped me come up with a food plan. He helped me figure out what my alcoholic foods were. I put down my alcoholic foods on the 9th of August 2016. Which was, I think, about 2 months after I came back into OA. And we started working the steps through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to his house every week, every Saturday morning for an hour and a half. We worked through the steps. It took 6 months. I hadn't a clue what I was doing. I didn't understand most of the steps. It took me about 2 years to figure out the difference between 10 and 11. 6 and 7, I'm still not sure if I understand what they're all about. But I kept going back. I kept going back, and that first sponsor really instilled in me the value of service. And he told me, "All right, you might only have a day or two absence, but you can still be of service by showing up to the meeting early. Help them set up the chairs. Help them put the chairs away." This was obviously before Zoom. I can take people's phone numbers and call them. There's so much opportunity to do service. And as soon as I hit that 30 days, I think it was back then, to do whatever, it was, secretary or in that meeting, I can't remember the specifics, but I put my hand up and said, "I'll do it." And then I heard a lady talk about intergroup, and I was like, "What's intergroup?" And she told me what intergroup was. So she said, that she went every 2 months. So I went, because she had something that I wanted, and I went along, and I joined I can't remember now, the workshop committee, or one of the committees, whichever would take someone with very little abstinence, and I started helping out there. And then if maybe a few months later, I became intergroup rep, and I did that for a year, and then I became the literature rep at Intergroup, and then I became the treasurer, and then I became the chair, and I just kept going and moving, and nothing about my recovery has been perfect, nothing. Like I said there, like sometimes I still get confused with some of the steps. I still get confused with spiritual terms and spiritual ideas, and I still get confused by what I see in my inventory, but I keep coming back. I keep trying, one day at a time. And my life has changed beyond my wildest dreams in the last 8 years, like absolutely beyond my wildest dreams. I already told you about my physical recovery. Like I'm wearing the same clothes, well, some of them could be 5 or 6 years old, whereas back in the food days, I was going through clothes every 6 months, because they were either too big, too small, or whatever, but I was just growing in and out of clothes all the time. And of course, as soon as I grow out of something, I throw it away because I'd never need that again, but then I would. But thankfully, not anymore. Every area of my life has improved in some shape or form. Some areas have improved quicker than others. Some areas have improved better than others. My relationship with my family has improved greatly. With my friends, my relationship to myself has improved. My relationship with my body, my health has improved. My career has improved. My financial situation has improved. Everything, like there's nothing has gotten worse, except maybe I get cold a little bit more easily now. I was never cold before, whereas now sometimes I do. Well, a lot of the time in the winter I'm cold. But I mean, that is pretty small price to pay. And like I said, I've just kept at it, and for me, I believe, I didn't share this, but obviously when I came into OA the second time around, I learned I had an illness. They call it alcoholism in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a physical allergy. When I eat certain foods, I develop a craving and I just cannot stop. And I remember when I first heard that, I didn't really get it. And I was still in the food at the time. And I went to a shop and I bought this food and I took a bite of it. And like my whole body started shaking, and I was like, oh, that is the craving. I just felt this massive amount of energy come through me. And like, you need more now. Don't stop until you get more. So I have that, and I have a mental obsession. So my brain will tell me that food is going to make me feel better. My brain will tell me one little bite won't hurt. My brain will tell me it's your birthday. My brain will tell me everyone else is having it. It's okay today. My brain is out to get me. My brain is not my best friend, my mind. I have this crazy thinking. That just wants me to be obese and miserable and in my room on my own, isolated and secluded from life, and yeah, a very more than likely early death, painful, slow, and yeah, shame riddled. So when I learned I had that, you'd think that would be bad news, but for me, it was actually brilliant news. It was because I had spent 10 years trying to find that information because I knew something wasn't quite right, but I didn't know what it was. And all the professionals that I went to, and I used to have a resentment against them because I spent so much money on them, but I don't anymore, thank God. They did their best with the information and the training that they had. But I spent a lot of money with a lot of different professionals trying to sort this out, and none of them could help me. But I came into OA and they told me I had this illness. It was just a relief, I was just so relieved because I not only did I find out I had an illness, I also found out that there was a solution, and that solution is the 12 steps. And like I said, I worked through those with my sponsor 8.5 years ago now. And I've continued to work them every year since then. I don't even know how many times I've worked the steps, but I've definitely worked them 10 or 11 or 12 times in the last 8 years. For the last 2 or 3 or 4 years, I've definitely done them twice a year. I'm working on them right now. I'm in the middle of an inventory. I have a progressive illness. It gets worse, never better, and I have to stay on top of that, and I have to keep working the steps because I have to keep going deeper. The food, thank God, doesn't call me anymore. It doesn't call me anymore, but I can do other crazy things. I can make other crazy decisions. I can not always be the nicest person in the world. I can still be selfish and self-centered, and I need the steps to keep me grounded, to keep me sane, to keep me connected to my higher power, and that relationship is, the most important thing in my life right now. It took me a long time to get there. I don't define my higher power anymore. I use the word higher power, I use the word God, but I had to stop defining it because I just don't have the words. I don't have the understanding to say what it is. To me, it's just something I experience. It's something I feel. It's something, I don't know if it's inside me or outside of me, or if it's a being or what it is. I haven't a clue. I haven't a clue. And it doesn't really matter, but it's something I feel. It's something I experience. It's something that comes to me when I'm quiet, when I'm still. And it can come to me too when I'm not quiet and still, when I'm crazy and going off the rails. And I can get that little nudge into the ribs saying, hey, what's going on here now? But that is the thing I work hardest at now, is that connection. It's, for me, it's personal. It's very personal. It's a relationship I develop by spending time, by talking, by talking to my higher power and listening as best as I can. And it's a wonderful thing. I've had some health things over the last kind of 5 or 6 months that have been difficult. In the last few weeks, I just had a very painful experience. Nothing life-threatening, but it was tough, painfully. And my higher power was just there with me. I couldn't go to meetings for a couple of weeks, and I really kind of struggled with engaging with the program. But like, my higher power, it was just me and my higher power, there every day, every hour, every minute. And that's all I need. That's all I need. I mean, if OA were to disappear tonight, I as long as I have my connection to my higher power, I know I'll be okay. That is what the book promises, that my higher power does the heavy lifting, so I don't have to. I hope OA doesn't go away. I hope it's here for many, many more years, because it definitely would be a lot harder without it. But the only other thing I want to talk about is, obviously with significant weight loss, there are some other kind of implications of that. And back in January, I had skin removal surgery, and I know that's something a lot of people experience. And this is my first time actually talking about it out loud, well, not out loud, but to a meeting of people. So I don't know what I'm going to say, but I just want to share that that is something. If you lose a significant amount of weight, that there can be some excess skin issues. I don't know if it gets talked about often enough in meetings, but there's definitely lots of people out there who've done it, and there's people out there who'd like to do it. And I did it. I went through with it back in January. It's still a ongoing thing. I don't know exactly how I feel about it. It was definitely an unusual experience. But I don't really know what to share about it other than that I had it done. And I'm recovering from it. I'm recuperating. My body is still healing. It's a big thing for a compulsive overeater to go through, I think, because I have such a skewed perspective of my body. And even though that has improved greatly in the last 8 years, I've done a lot of work on loving my body, and I do love my body, thank God now. There's still a lot of mixed emotions there about it, but the reason I wanted to share it really was just to let other people know, if you're thinking about it or if you've done it, that there are other people out there who have done it. And I'm happy to share my story on that in greater detail, on one-to-one basis. I will share my phone number. It is there on beside my name, but I'll pop it into the chat if and when that opens. I'm guessing it will be open at some point, so I will stick it there. I am always happy to take outreach from anyone, anytime, anywhere, whether it's a WhatsApp message, a voice note, a text. If you know where I live, if you knock on my door, I'll let you in. But yeah, I love outreach and I love talking to people. I don't go to a lot of virtual meetings. I have a home group, a physical meeting home group here in Dublin that I go to. But at the same time, anytime anybody asks me to attend and to share, I'm always happy to do that, as long as I can fit it in. So yeah, I think I'm about to run out of time. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Rita, for inviting me here. And hopefully, I will see you all again soon. Might see you somewhere in a meeting. I'm going to the, I don't even know what it's called, the thing in Coventry in July. What's it called? The England Convention, Heart of England Convention in July in Coventry. So if anyone is going to that, I might see you there. Otherwise, thank you for listening, and I'll shut up now.